Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 2016 PMI Global Congress here in beautiful and very sunny San Diego. With me is Kim Wasson. Hello, Kim.
Good morning, Cornelius.
Hi. How are you doing? How's the Congress so far for you?
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. The keynote was incredible.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much as well. We've had you on the program before, right?
I have been on the program before,
so
indeed.
Glad to meet you in person here at the Congress. So you are a speaker. One unhappy person can ruin your beautiful plan is the title of your presentation. And in the abstract, the first sentence you say is one, just one unmotivated person on your team can bring everything crashing down. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I can. Emotional contagion is a fairly new concept in management psychology, but this is what it is. One person's unhappy and it becomes catching.
Kind of right? Like a virus.
It is very much like a virus and it moves really quickly. And so it's very important to catch it at the beginning and try to keep everybody motivated, because once one person's unmotivated, pretty quickly the next person's going to be, because they have to work with the unmotivated person, right? And it just spreads through your team very quickly.
Hmm. I think at the heart of your presentation is the book by Daniel Goleman, which he published about 20 years ago, called Emotional Intelligence, Why It Can Matter More Than IQ. Reread it, right?
I reread it. I hadn't read it for almost 20 years, and I had a coaching client who had to read it and said, I don't understand how this has anything to do with project management. So I reread it and was very pleased to see that all the things that I've learned practically have a basis in some really deep research. So this is good stuff. It really is that it's not just about the process and it's not just about the rules. It really is about establishing some kind of a relationship with people so that you can understand them and communicate effectively with them.
Mm-hmm. Emotional intelligence for project managers, that is the subtitle of your particular presentation. Can you define emotional intelligence for our listeners? Is it possible?
Do you have to
read the book?
Yeah. Well, the book never defines it. The book
is really
the definition. Wikipedia has a good definition of it, and it the basics for project managers are understand what makes people around you tick, understand what motivates them, understand what their goals are, and understand your own, and then be able to recognize and label emotions. Labeling is very important in his book, but it's always important to have a name so that you can move forward on something. And then to communicate effectively with people based on that understanding.
Mm-hmm. The main part of your paper, and I assume presentation as well, talks about building relationships and understanding your team.
Yes.
How does that relate to my success on projects?
That's a very important piece of this. So there's a balance between projects, between process and people. If there are no people, you don't have a project, right? You have a piece of automation. And so when I started, I was very focused on the process side of projects. And I spent my days thinking if everybody would just do their job.
Yeah, or if everybody would just follow my Microsoft project
just
schedule.
Do it. Then we'd have a great project.
Yes.
But I shouldn't have to nag. But the fact is everybody has different priorities. And part of our job as project managers is to make our priorities their priorities. And you don't do that by shouting at them. You do that by understanding them and what makes them tick. Your project's not going to move forward if they don't think that what you're doing is important and that the pieces are important. And so understanding the people and having those relationships and seeing when things go wrong because they're willing to tell you, which is not always the case, right? Especially if you're working with software engineers are famous for optimism, right? I can finish it. It'll be done tomorrow. No problem, right? And to get the information that leads you to the understanding that no, it's not going to be done tomorrow. They have to trust you. You have to have a relationship so that people can talk to you and know that they're going to get some good action and not just get beat up because they're not part of, working on the schedule.
All right. You break down the building of relationships and understanding your teams into various areas: goals, learning style, motivation, skills matching, and tools. And we want to go and look at each of these individually, one by one. So let's begin with the goals. What is the relationship between goals and emotional intelligence?
There are a couple of them. One of them has to do, we heard it this morning in the Afterburner talk, that you need to align people with the goals of the project.
Okay.
That means, first of all, you have to know the goals of the project, right? Because they're not, you know, who's going to follow them if they don't know what they are? You need to get people to participate. People need to feel like they belong. You're going to get better results if once you have the goals that people can contribute to best ways to achieve those goals as a team. So that's buy-in, and that's part of emotional intelligence. And finally, everybody has their own goals. Everybody's, right, we all have our individual goals. If you establish a relationship and can understand what people's individual goals are, you can help them meet the goals within the parameters of the project. For example, if you have an engineer who wants to go into marketing and you're on a project and you need a marketing liaison, if that engineer can handle it, send her on. Let her be the marketing liaison. Let her see that. She is achieving her goal. You're fulfilling something on the project. You know, she feels heard. Your company's better off because she can figure out whether she wants to go there or not. So it's a win all around. But the big thing is she's achieving her goal, not looking outside the project for some other thing that might help her do that. On the flip side, you find out if people have goals that don't line up with the project goals, because that's a problem, right? You either need to find them a different project or figure out how to align them, or at the very least, if none of those things work, you need to keep an eye on places where the goals are going to run into each other and be a problem.
Mm. When you say it's important and it's part of emotional intelligence to get the goals across, whose emotional intelligence are we talking about? Mine as the project leader, or the emotional intelligence of the team as a whole?
Yes.
Or everybody?
Everybody. Okay. Really, it is, because half of emotional intelligence is understanding your own, and the other half is understanding what's going on with other people. And so you really do need to have those two things come together.
Okay. Then we're moving on to learning style. How important is it for a project manager to understand learning styles?
I think that it is an incredibly powerful tool for something so simple. That you could certainly operate without it, but I think you operate much more effectively if you understand mm-hmm. what they are. They're very easy. It's very easy to tell what your own and other people's learning styles are. And even if you don't do that, understanding what they are so that you can communicate in multiple styles at once, which is much easier than it sounds. Really, not any additional work, just a matter of organizing what you're doing. People are very busy. Right, and they're going to take, everybody learns in all the styles, but people take in information most easily in one or two of the ways, and so you're going to be at the top of their list if it's easy, right? We're all very bombarded with information. Mm-hmm. We're going to cherry pick first, and so you want to be sure that you do that, and that helps everybody communicate effectively both ways.
Mm-hmm. And just to be absolutely clear, when we talk about learning styles, we normally talk about how do you best learn? How do you best study for something? For example, preparing for your PMP exam. In this particular environment here, we're talking about how do I, as the project manager, understand the learning styles of the people on my project so that when I communicate project information to them, I do it in such a way that it is easy for them to grasp and take in,
that
right?
That is exactly it.
That's what we mean in this case by learning style.
There will be people on your team, for example, who will never read an email. So it does you no good to send it out. Their learning style may be auditory, so you want to pick up the phone mm-hmm. and tell them. If you need something from them, you don't send them an email, you pick up the phone, because that's what works best for them. They may ignore your email for you know, days while someone else is calling them on the phone and getting what they need from them. And so it really is like that. It really isn't that people ignore you or people can't take in the information, but you want that immediate reaction. That's going to come by making it easy.
Mm-hmm. How do I get to know the learning style of my team members? Do I just ask them?
You know, you can learn by observation very quickly.
Okay.
There are very, very clear markers of learning styles for people.
And what about virtual teams? I mean, everybody is now virtual. I have team members all over the world. How do I address learning styles and communication styles there?
You know, some of that is observable, but I actually do ask them. I ask my point people. I explain what they are. And most people really like to play with this stuff, right? It's like any survey. Everybody likes a survey, right? And there are surveys, there are online surveys, but people know when you explain it to them. And they'll tell me, you know, that people are pretty forthcoming. I always tell them mine first, never require any of it. But yeah, sometimes when you're remote, it's easier to just ask.
Okay. So those were the first two, goals and learning style. Moving on to motivation. I think we heard that again.
We did hear that this morning.
In the Afterburner keynote there. when he gave the example of some people coming after the mission saying, I had no idea why we were doing this mission, right? So the motivation lines up nicely with that.
It does. It does. And with goals, right? Because think of the military, people are much more highly motivated by the goals, right?
Of their missions.
Yes, and certainly those missions with their life on the line, but also the entire culture supports the, here's what we're going to do, okay, everybody do it. And so you have to add to that when you're in the private sector, I think. And people are motivated by many, many different things, and that can be a little hard to find out. But the more you find out, the better off you're going to be, because it's, as with so many other things, easy to help satisfy it once you know what they are, right?
All right. Give us a few examples here in regards to motivating factors and where you would use those in a project setting.
Recognition is actually a big one. And in the U.S., for the most part, people like to be recognized in public. Mm-hmm. That's not true in all cultures, and it's not true with all people.
Just basically saying thank you?
Basically saying thank you. Susan did this process a different way. It was great. We're going to pick this up and do it again. Sometimes it's the big certificate thing. That's always nice. Right. But usually just a pat on the back. I did, at one point, I managed 5 groups of project managers for a big company, and they had 10 active projects each with 15 waiting in the wings. It just was, and all I got were little ninja tchotchkes. Just little things. And we had a monthly meeting, and everybody got their ninja tchotchkes for whatever they finished. And that was something. That was a reward that could be, you know, set up on a cube wall and look, I got 10 of these things. I am really moving on this.
Gamification, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a big thing. Play is important. Yeah. But it can be as simple as that. But a recognition, somebody cares what I'm doing. You know, it's important. Another competition, certainly when I work with tech teams, inside the team, competition is usually a huge motivator. You know, who can fix the most bugs? Whose code has the fewest bugs? You know, people like to play with that, and that's a very easy one and can be very fruitful and usually very measurable.
And what about salary?
Salary, it's very motivating to some people, but the average number of paychecks after a raise that continue to motivate people, 2.
Really?
It's very, very small. People are very motivated by it, as we as project managers often don't have a lot of control other than, awards at the end of a project or something, and contributing to good reviews. Mm-hmm. But that's one that's a little harder for us to satisfy.
What about bringing food?
That is so absolutely important. Of course, if you do it once, then you have to do it every meeting.
Oh,
there is nothing like food to bring people, and chocolate. Chocolate, I don't remember if I put it in the paper, and I don't know if I'll have time to cover it today, but chocolate is how you tell how your project's going. If you have chocolate in your office, there, you can tell how much trouble your project is in by how quickly it goes away. And because of the whole concept of reciprocation, if you have something they have to unwrap, like Hershey's Kisses, people will stand there and tell you what's going on while they're eating it. So you get to hear about your project and see the stress level of I can't tell you how many project managers I know who do this. It really
just have
bowl of chocolate
to snack
on your desk. It has to be chocolate, because that's... None of us were surprised when the study came out that said chocolate relieves stress. We were like,
yeah,
duh. You know, you needed a study to tell you that. We could tell you about that. But it's kind of black gold. It's one of the only universal motivators and you know, WD-40 and duct tape that I have in my toolkit. But there's nothing that will get people to a meeting on time like food.
Lovely.
Absolutely, for sure.
We're moving on to skills matching.
Yes,
and
indeed.
When we talk about skills, we have to talk about both hard skills and soft skills, right?
Yes.
And it's much easier to match the hard skills, because I know you're a software developer. I know you're the designer. So that's where you're going to go.
Yes.
Right? That's where your skills are. But what about the soft skills?
The soft skills, which are harder really to get a hold of, are transferable skills. And they go from position to position. And there are things like communications and leadership and presentation skills. I always try to have what I call a mom on my team, and that has nothing to do with gender, but that is the person that everybody comes to with their problems. That's the person who remembers the birthdays. That is the person, you know, as project managers, we have you know, we have to be the bad guy sometimes too. The project mom doesn't, right? The project mom is the person that's the safe place always to go. And they're the heart of the project team, really, I find. I will take a mediocre technical skill to get a mom on my team, for example, because the results are incredible. Someone who presents well and can communicate outside your team in some cases is extremely important. So the goals of your project, the atmosphere, environment that you're going to be operating in, who you're going to have to communicate with, all kind of drive what soft skills you need on your project. So you have to evaluate and try to build your team. If you have two people who are equal in their hard skills and one of them brings a critical soft skill, there's no contest about who you're going to select for your team. So it's I really think it's as important as hard skills, although without the hard skills, you just don't have a chance. And without the soft skills, you raise your odds a bit.
How do you learn about the soft skills, in particular when you have a team that's never worked with you before?
Yeah, that's difficult. Part of that's the relationships.
Okay.
You start to build a little bit, you start to see it. Part of it is word of mouth. You will hear about, if people are particularly good about something, you'll hear about it from the rest of the team. And some of it is just observation. You may have to build your team and then figure out who you're going to put in what roles, not the technical roles, but the supporting roles, because everybody plays some supporting role in your project.
And what about the situation where you have zero say over who's on your team? It's just, here's your team, deal with it.
Get them and try to work with it. And sometimes what you end up doing in that case is you find somebody who's got the potential and you figure out how to get them the experience or the training or whatever and the soft skills. If you've got a newbie out of school and you find out they're talking to everybody, that's great. Now you need to channel it.
All right. So building relationships, understanding your team. We've looked at four areas: goals, learning style, motivation, skills matching. And of course, here comes the big one that project managers are always wanting: tools. Yeah. So what tools are we talking about? Or let's begin with something else. How will tools help us?
They provide a supporting role. Learning styles, actually, I consider a tool.
Okay.
So that's there. Some things like Myers-Briggs. that you have to be a little cautious with using something like that. But they do help your team get a better understanding of each other, at least for the point in time, because those things can change on a day-to-day basis for a lot of people. But they will get team members talking. They will get people in a position of, it's not that you don't like me, you're an introvert. I get it. I understand. Okay? I can work with that. Or I see why it is that my standing over you is driving you crazy because you're a J and not a T or whatever it is. I mean, it's a good starting point. It's a good talking point, things like the Myers-Briggs. Meetings, I consider a huge tool, especially for this emotional intelligence piece of our job. You see how people interact. You get to guide those interactions. If you do things right, if you follow the rules, right, you send out the agenda the day ahead of time.
I was just going to go for that. So you're thinking if you do the meeting set up right, so
yes,
the technical side of getting the meeting going and doing, then you have to focus more on the emotional side of
yes.
the meeting.
Yes.
Understanding, seeing who's talking, who's not talking, who is right. providing input, who is holding back. Do you feel any animosities between people? So that's where you would look at
in regards
to emotional intelligence in the
exactly.
meetings.
Exactly. So right. the technical setup is important, but you can get so much more out of them.
Another example you have in here is time management and reminder systems.
Yes,
how does that help me in emotional intelligence?
Well, it's not really so much your time management and reminders, but helping encourage people on your team to have their own systems. Because, we're driving people to do that. We don't want to do that for them. We don't want to be nagging at them every minute of the day. But when you look at things like learning styles, you realize that time management systems are very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can help guide your team to do things in their learning style, right? If they are tactile, they need to touch things. So trying to do everything online is probably not working for them. And you can make those suggestions. Write it on the whiteboard. And check it off. How does that work for you? So that gets you a little more out of it, and it makes them feel more in control. And that is a really powerful thing for people on your team with all the things that we're talking about this morning with the afterburner, with the task saturation or the information overload, to be able to focus effectively and feel like you're in control and not having just things just roll you over is very important, and it really helps the emotional health of your team for each person to feel like they have that kind of control. But one size doesn't fit all is the problem. You have to be, you know, recognize that and try to point them to where they can get something in place that works for them.
Mm-hmm. Eisenhower Matrix is on here as well. Is that the
it
one
is.
With urgency and
that's
importance?
Urgent and important. And it's not exactly emotional intelligence, but it is a very simple and pointed prioritization tool that everybody can understand and that you can use as a shortcut on your team. You want everybody to play in urgent and important, right? You would like not to be in urgent and not the other way. Not important, not urgent, but important. That's where you get the biggest bang for your buck. Keeps you out of urgent and important because
right.
that's the panic situations,
yep.
right? And so you're working to do that, but it also helps you communicate with people that what you're doing is down here. This is not urgent and not important. And I mean, a lot of times people who are overwhelmed try to spend their time doing those things and they don't realize it even. And so this is just a piece of shorthand that helps everybody be on the same page without any judgment. It's an extremely non-judgmental tool. It really just is, you know, is it urgent? That's pretty clear. And is it important? Maybe not so clear, but people usually know. It's just putting them together and recognizing them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Goals, learning styles, motivation, skills matching, tools. Other than really applying these on my projects and failing miserably and then not doing the same mistakes next time, how do I, as a project manager, increase my emotional intelligence in these five areas?
Steady application and paying attention to it. And the, what did they call it? The debrief. A personal debrief will help you.
Okay.
Right? How did I handle that situation and could it have gone better?
Literally asking the person or asking yourself?
Both. Okay. If you have to establish a level of trust with someone for them to actually tell you, you know, I hate it when you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's part of the relationship building that you want to do. And so, like everything else, you do what I very politically incorrectly call a postmortem on a regular basis. And I do that, you know, if I come out of a meeting and it didn't go well, I am all over, you know, dissecting it and what did I say and what didn't go well and where was the turning point where I lost this person. And you really have to pay attention to it just like you do the process.
Right. You're probably saying that so that I know that after this interview, we're going to do a postmortem, right?
Yes, absolutely. Very important. Got it on my list.
Absolutely. Are there any trainings available for project managers and emotional intelligence specifically? Have you heard of anything?
I have not, other than the learning. There are learning styles training.
Okay.
ICD does a fair amount of that, and they actually have all the neurological data behind it, but they have a lot of applications of it. That's the only place that I have really seen any of this. I would love to see more of it because I think it's becoming an increasingly recognized important part of what we do.
Okay. Right. Give us your conclusion. Give us your recommendation for our listeners, for the project managers out there. How do they improve their emotional intelligence? What can they do right now on their projects to make things hopefully go a little bit smoother?
Stop by each person's cube or call them if they're remote right away. And stop, just talk and ask them, how are things going? Stop by on Monday morning and say, how was your weekend? You will find more out about what motivates that person by their answer to what happened over the weekend than any other question that you can answer. And then try to figure out from that, what are they looking for from you? You know, if they're going skiing, maybe they're looking for some excitement. If they're, you know, reading a book, maybe, you know, they need a little piece of calm in their life. That's the one thing that you could do immediately is just go say hello and ask them that question.
Excellent. Kim, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.